irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
That is Apache by Jorgen Ingman. And I believe we have John Biggs on the phone, do we, John? Okay, who do we have on the phone? Bobby? Bobby, we have you?
No.
John?
This is John Biggs. Yeah, I'm calling on my cell phone. I didn't receive a call yet.
Oh, well, that's because we've been trying to call you on your new number and it didn't work.
Oh, okay.
So I've got you now. I just need to get Bobby Jean back in, and I think we're going to be good.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry, it's on a cell phone. Now, that other number was the one I talked to you on yesterday.
Right. Okay, Bobby Jean, we got you back? Oh, crap, really? All right, here, let me call her back again and see if we can get her.
We are.
I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. This is just one of those nights. All right.
Yeah, everybody to the lifeboat.
What? I tried to merge. Oh, okay. And that should come in? Both calls? There you are.
Hey, Jim, can you hear me?
I can. John, do we still have you?
Okay, I'm just on my regular
phone. Yes, you do.
Okay, good.
It didn't come through Skype.
Okay.
So I'm just on my regular phone. How is everyone tonight?
Oh, my God, I am just like...
It's okay.
You know that commercial where nervous sweat? That's me.
We're ready to break out the hard liquor right now.
I'm going to, you know what? I don't have anything prepared tonight. So, Richard, take it away, and we'll get into the show pretty early.
There you go. Congratulations, first-time authors. You have finally typed those glorious words, the end, on your very first book. And now I've got some very bad news for you. Your work is just starting. You're not done. You've got editing, formatting, you got to create your book cover, and then you got to market the thing so that people will know it's out there and buy it and read it. It does sound like a whole lot of work, but we've got news for you. The people at Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing have a new program aimed for first-time authors to help you get through all of that and get your book out there and get you paid. So to find out more about our program, including access to an editor and a cover artist at a reduced cost, it's going to be one of those nights. Give us a call at 805-795-3165 or email this crazy guy across from me, Jay Christie, at TuscanyBayBooks.com, and we'll help you out. And God help us tonight.
Tonight, you know what? Biggs, it's all your fault.
I know that.
Well, I don't know about you all, but I got a couple of shiners here.
We got about six of them in here floating around. Every time I turn around, something else jabs me in the ass. So it's just one of those nights. Oh my God! So Bobby, we're not doing your ad this week, and we're not doing Target Freight. So there you have it.
We're not doing
All Dogs Rule either. So there you have it.
Look, if you want to ship something, call Target Freight. If you need something for your dog, give Russ a call.
Give me a call, and I'll give you Target Freight's number. And there you have it.
Or go listen to last week's show.
Okay. Well, man, tonight's been just a comedy of errors.
Oh, has it ever?
You know, we very rarely, I think in 3 years, this never happened, has it, Bobby?
I can't recall quite such an uneven start.
I know, huh? Anyway, our guest.
What a story of my life.
Well, you know what? Apparently, this evening it's also the story of mine. So. We have as a guest tonight in the Writer's Block, Mr. John Biggs, who is he writes about I'm probably going to let you tell him tell you a lot about it. He does writes a lot about the Indian mysticism and Native American stuff in Oklahoma. And the last book that we reviewed and talked about here on this show was Popsicle Sticks, and it was just a wonderful book, and we always enjoyed the hell out of it. And that's when we found out that John Biggs is a pretty good writer. So, of course, we all were jumping into the pool trying to get this one read, and we were so happy to be able to finally get it. And I have to say, John, congratulations. You have absolutely stymied me once again.
Well, thank you.
Sure, you're welcome.
Are you able to hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
Yeah.
Which means the world can hear you. So where did this book come from? Where did this story come from?
Well, I guess where they all come from. I started doing some research a while back for no particular reason, just going through the internet, and I started looking at people who were struck by lightning. And I started off with YouTube, and they actually had pictures on there of people who had been struck by lightning 2 and 3 times in a row while on the way to their car and survived. And I ran across a guy named Roy Thompson who had been struck 6 times in his life. He was a guard or guide at Shenandoah National Monument in Virginia, and he had survived 6 lightning strikes. And then I ran across a young lady who had been struck by lightning while she was pregnant and then gave birth to a live child. And I just started wondering, my gosh, what effect would that have on that kid? I mean, it would almost have to have something.
Oh, yeah.
And it sort of geared me in. And, of course, I tend to write everything about Native American mysticism to a certain degree, and usually associated with the Choctaw tribe as opposed to others. And so that's kind of where I started.
Right.
Now, is the reason you picked the Choctaw, is that because you're in that area, that's where you live in Oklahoma, or was it something else that drew you to that particular tribe?
You know, I'm having difficulty hearing you now after all this difficulty getting through. Could you repeat that?
Sure. I was wondering if you had picked the Choctaw tribe because you live in that area, or was there something else about them that drew your interest and made you want to include them in stories like this?
Well, partially it's because they're in this area. They're one of the what's known as the 5 civilized tribes, which is kind of an arrogant thing for white people to call Native Americans, I guess. But they were removed to this area from the southeast in the 1830s by Andrew Jackson. But they've been here. The Choctaw have made every effort to try to be incorporated into white mainstream society, and they've been rejected at pretty much every turn until probably the 20th century. Maybe they started happening, getting in a little bit. And so I was a for many years, 40 years actually, I was a dentist, and I worked part of the time on Indian Health Service patients. And a fairly large number of my patients were Choctaw, and I found they were very, very talkative. They'd tell me as much as I wanted to know about their culture. At least I think they were leveling with me. And so I picked a little bit up here and there, and just got interested and started learning as more as I went along. Met a storyteller, a guy named Tim Tingle, who is also a writer. And he tells traditional Choctaw stories, collects them and puts them in books and tells them. And if you've never heard a real oral historian at work, you've really missed out something that, everybody should hear at least once. And I'm talking to Tim. Tim is Choctaw, and so I got interested in him. I read his book called Walking the Choctaw Road, and I feel very close to that particular tribe. Have no blood, not, you know, I'm not related to that indigenous tribe, but I still feel very close to them.
You know, it's really funny because today when I was trying to find music to open your show, even though I couldn't really get your show open, you know, I was sitting there thinking, what the hell am I going to use for Oklahoma Choctaw? And it finally just came across Apache, and I said, you know what, it's close enough. So Richard says,
I know, we have Apache.
I know, huh?
We Richard have says in Oklahoma too.
Richard says, well, you know. Yeah, you're going to play Apache for Choctaw? I said, well, if he recorded a song called Choctaw, we'd probably be playing it. But today's just been one of those kind of days, John.
Yeah.
You really had to be here to appreciate it.
Gotta have him.
Oh,
well, John,
my God.
This is Bobby here, and I have to tell you that, again, another page turner. The premise, you know, from the very beginning, and I love that when a book gets me with the first two or three sentences, and here we are in a hospital room, and a woman wakes up suddenly speaking Spanish, and that is not her normal language, and you just can't help but want to know, where are we going from here? And oh my, do you take us on a ride?
You do. That's a fact.
Thank you. Even I was wondered where I was going to go from there.
Well, I think we all wondered where we were going to go from here.
You know, I kind of wondered, John, a little bit. Jim and I were talking earlier this afternoon, and I said, you know, this book, it kind of starts a certain way, and then I wondered if it really got a hold of you as you went through the process and took you into places you really didn't expect to go.
It absolutely did. Everything that I write sort of does that. The characters develop a life of their own. Frequently, I thought that my preacher character was going to be a better guy before I got started. Even though I sort of
two preachers, but one really takes over the book. You must be speaking of Reverend Johnson.
Right, yeah.
Our six-gun-toting Reverend.
I had to go back. That's a situation where I had to go back and give him a gold cross on one of his front teeth so I could recognize his skeleton later on.
Well, yeah.
So was that something that you did? You say you went back. So he didn't have that all along, but it's at some point you said, you know, he needs to have that.
That's right. Yeah, I thought it would. Yeah. Plus, I spent a lot of years doing dentistry, and I ran across a few people with dental jewelry from time.
Oh, I'm sure you did. Look at the NFL. Look at the hip-hop
crowd. Well, yeah,
crowds.
He's quite a character. He's a gunslinging, he's quite a
character. Gunslinging preacher.
So now, given that you're in Oklahoma, is that character based on anybody you came across? Because I have met a few in Texas more that way.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say.
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting.
No, go ahead, John.
Go ahead.
I actually grew up, spent my youth in Illinois. I came to Oklahoma, and it was a long time ago. It was 1975, so I've been here a long time.
It's a long time.
The holy roller type ministers, the faith healers and like that, that I've run across. Well, we had a very famous one here in Oklahoma, Oral Roberts. But most of those I ran across in southern Illinois. That particular minister, as time went on, I interrupted that story and read a biography of Jim Jones, actually. And I don't know if you read that or got to the part where he's using Kool-Aid.
That's
straight out of Jim Jones. Well, he wasn't poisoning people on purpose.
Yeah, good old Jim. Yeah, now wait. No, your reverend is using Tupa.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tupa.
Right. Well, that's actually the. Well, I you know, it's I kind of made that up. That's the. But if that's the supreme god of the Guarani tribe of Paraguay, the creator of light and the creator of man, and of course those tribes all had some interesting drugs they worked with.
But, oh sure.
I named that one after a god specifically. In fact, until Jim reminded me of it, I'd forgotten where I came up with that name.
Well, I told you, there actually is a plant that's the tupa plant. And they do take stuff out of it, but it's not the psychedelic that you – well, your idiot preacher's dropping it in his eyes, but, you know.
Well, you know, there are a number of psychedelic plants they use in Central and South America that
sure.
the indigenous tribes use that they do. They don't put it in their eyes, typically, but they do put it in their sinuses. I mean, not just like cocaine, but liquids that they in fact, peyote is done that way sometimes.
Right.
Is ingested through the sinuses. Or they make cuts on their skin and ingest it through the cuts.
Wow.
So sort of the way we did blotter acid back in the 60s, I guess, or some people did,
wow.
I'm sure.
I was amazed at your preacher, Johnson. I mean, you know, here's a guy that, you know, started doing miracles in his tent, and pretty soon he's got a PayPal account that's overflowing. And he's got the two Indians, twins that don't say a word and just stare forward.
Hey, marketing
That's
works.
Right, you know,
works
preachers,
marketing is everything.
Preachers have to do marketing too. Yeah.
And then he gets the girl in there to start doing the miracles with the electricity. The guy's like, he's awesome. It's really too bad that he does turn out to be
props.
He does turn out to be rather a rat's ass, but you know.
And he does.
Yeah,
he doesn't actually mean well.
You know, by the end of the we don't want to do lots of spoiler alerts,
no spoilers.
But you know, he gets very thin. You take him through quite a progression of or regression of lifestyle for the
Reverend.
That,
he's into the tupa really heavily at that point.
No, did he really evolve? Did he really take over the story for you, John, and just sort of demanded this is the way that he's got to be written?
It sort of did. This was the first book that I'd ever written in this manner. I didn't write this straight through. I've done them all to a certain extent this way, but I wrote a lot of Junior Johnson stuff separately. In fact, I've actually sold some of the chapters that didn't become chapters as short stories along the way.
Oh, well, that's the way to do it.
Which is a common thing that I do with writing is one of the ways I develop characters is I write short stories about them. Then you know, don't necessarily use that, or if I do, I'll turn around and you know, it'll be quite different, but. At least I know things about the character that won't be necessarily included in the narrative.
Yeah, I mean that's actually smart. You know, you've introduced some characters. Yeah, I'm sure. You introduced some characters in this book that some of them had a really big impact. Some of them didn't have any impact. Some of them kind of had a comedic impact, and
mm-hmm.
like Uncle Billy. and then Shorty, the old man Shorty, came and went like, well, he's a truck driver. You know, he just finally just disappeared, and that was it. But the young lady, what was her
name? That's right.
What's the girl's name? Glenna?
Glenna. Yes, Glenna.
Right, mm-hmm. Yes.
She Bobby and I were talking about this earlier, and we're thinking, you know, she's so, well, not confused. She's never confused. She's extremely intelligent. But she can't speak.
Yeah.
She can't speak her mind unless the lightning is really pounding hard, and then she can actually talk until the lightning stops, and then she goes back to being blabbering again.
Yeah.
But I that,
you know, that's absolutely just made it tough to make her as a narrating character.
I have absolutely no doubt. You have a caller. Let me get him on the line and let's find out how they want to praise you or tell you to don't write any more books. Hang on. Hello there. You're on the Writer's Block. This is Jim. How may I help you?
This is Glenna. I'm calling in for John Biggs' Writer's Block.
Okay, well, you got the Writer's Block. Let me see if I can
and
get all
I'm
these.
I'm Glenna.
You're Glenna. You're Glenna in the book.
Yes.
Well, uh-oh. Let's see if I can get you all put in here together. I don't know that I can do that because every time I do that, I hang up on somebody.
Well, if you hang up on anyone, hang up on me.
Well, but I don't want to hang up on anybody, so hang tough. Let's see if I can get you all in here.
Okay,
let's see. Who do we have? Just Glenna so far, right?
Glenna Gilstrap.
Oh, wow. We even have a last name. Okay, Ronan.
The engineer.
Our engineer just
ran
in here. He's my savior tonight. I'm telling you, I should have stayed home and drank bourbon. That's her. Yeah. You just hung up on her.
No, we are making Ronan earn his paycheck tonight, is what we're doing.
Oh, add to group. Okay, so we're all in there now?
I'm here.
Okay, John's here.
Hello.
Bobby's here.
I'm here.
Hello.
And Glenna's here.
We're all in the house.
Hot damn.
Oh, Glenna.
Okay, so like Glenna just did,
if you want to
call in and talk to John, the number here is 818-602-4929, and if I hang up on you, believe me, tonight is the night I'm going to do it, and it's not on purpose, trust me.
call back is all we're saying.
Call back is all we can say. So anyway, Glenna, you are the Glenna in the book.
I am.
So now we have to ask the question, of course, that everybody's waiting to hear. Do lightning bolts shoot out of your head?
Not lately.
Okay, so you're not the Glenna. Bobby, I'm sure that would intrigue you.
I think Bobby quite honest.
Yes, yes, of course.
So you've been a friend of John's for how many years?
Oh, gosh, 20 plus.
Really? And he actually talked you into using your name?
Actually, I asked him to.
Serious business.
I asked to be a character in one of his books and told him he could write whatever story he wanted to write, and this is what he came up with.
Wow. Well, you know,
I love it.
My partner Richard and I just finished a book we wrote together, and one of the deals was that he had a whole bunch of his friends in the book, most of which we killed off.
Pretty much all of them.
But his wife actually was a madam. That's one. His wife was a madam in the town. I said, that sealed the deal for me. Yeah. Now we have to write around Cheryl being a madam in the whorehouse. I like it.
Yeah, obviously her last name is not the same.
Right.
Yeah, I had no idea what I started when I put that call out.
Isn't it so much fun to wind up in a book and you see your name and you go, wow.
He actually
I can't believe what he did to me.
Yeah, let me go on record. Daniel Humphreys, you asked for it. That's all I'm going
to
say.
So anyway, you
well,
wound up.
And I'm wondering if there's going to be a sequel.
That was going to be one of our questions.
That was my question.
There you go.
That was my question.
There you go. So, John, you're on.
Well, I did leave room for a sequel.
Yes,
I
you did.
Kind of leave room for a sequel, but The only thing I have ever written which had sequels has been a series of novellas I did that still hasn't been published. Should have been published a while back, but still hasn't quite made it. It's got a home, but it just hasn't made it to print. Got a couple of the novellas that are in e-books, but I really found it difficult to write. My memory isn't as good as it used to be, perhaps. But it's really difficult to. I know people who write sequels have a Bible they keep that has everybody's eye color, everybody's name, everybody's family history, and I have never done that. And I guess if I write a sequel to This book, by the way, was going to be called Glenna, except my publisher had other ideas about that. But if there's a sequel to Shiners, I'm going to have to go back in. And of course, I can always do what Stephen King did and kill off everybody that was in the previous book except for one person.
Yeah, then you don't have to remember anything.
Continue on with that.
Well, see, I have to know if
it better be Glenna too.
I have to know if Glenna's boyfriend gets a new hand, because she, of course, blew the hell out of his other one. So his fake hand. So we need to find out if he gets another hand. So there's got to be a sequel, John.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
And find out
exactly
what the baby's like, because she is... I'm going
to
shoot myself in the head now.
Spoilers.
Because I just gave a spoiler alert.
Well, that book, that's something that I don't know. I imagine this is done by a lot of different people, but that's called bookending. And it's a book, so it's appropriate, but that book started with a pregnancy and ended with a pregnancy.
Yes, it did.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that necessarily makes for a satisfactory ending, but it gives you sort of a feeling of closure, whether it really closes anything or not.
Well, it kind of does, but then it kind of leaves a lot open.
So I'd be curious to explore Glenna as a mom.
Wow.
Well, Glenna is a mom. Oh, you're talking about the fictional Glenna.
Yeah. Yes. We're back to the electrifying Glenna. Yes.
I wasn't touching that.
You were backing off. Richard was backing off, I have to tell you. He jumped back in a hurry.
I abandoned ship is what I did.
That's because his wife doesn't get him, Adam.
Yeah.
So far, in every book I've ever written, I've never had a good mother.
So, hey, in real life, I didn't have one. So
I could start with Glenna, but usually the ones I have tend to be, they have a flexible moral standard.
Well,
John,
and
you're just leaving yourself wide open, right?
For a moment, just the title, because we're talking a lot about Glenna, and we've learned that the publisher really wanted to go with a different name, and Shiners do play a very important role throughout the book. But could you just touch a little bit on what are Shiners, or who are Shiners, or how did they come into the story?
Because they're not spirits.
Well, yeah, they are
well,
either
well, we
the footprints of spirits.
Talk to us a little bit
about it. They could be spirits. That's an interesting thing. This is part of my background. My mother's family were spiritualists, if you're familiar with that movement.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not, by the way. I'm a non-religious individual, but which helps when you're writing, I think. But as part of my research for a number of books, of course, my concept of research is I figure out something interesting that I'd like to do, and say, well, maybe I could use it in a book somewhere down the line. Mm-hmm. I attended a local spiritualist church.
Uh-huh.
And some of the things that they talked about there, some of the things that people were involved with, were very much like the Shiners. They weren't necessarily, a lot of them were personality free. Some of them weren't. Some of them had quite a personality.
Uh-huh.
But I met some very interesting people there, and people that I'm convinced believed in that stuff 100%. I never did, but I never pretended to.
Uh-huh. Well, you did a good job.
But the Shiners, I don't know. They're
Glenna
mystery.
Is the only character. Yes, Glenna. Well, no, I guess the Reverend also, because he sees his deceased wife,
Victoria,
and some other things too.
And of course, Glenna is sort of surrounded by Shiners.
Right. Right.
But the thing is my concept of magic realism, and I know that has a lot of different definitions for different people, is that things can have both a real and a magical explanation. And Glenna may see shiners because she has brain damage from being struck by lightning when she was in utero, and the Reverend sees them because he's taking a hallucinogenic drug in large doses.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people can get insights from things that aren't particularly real.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's one of the Native American things that I've kind of gotten into. I don't know if you've ever read Black Elk Speaks or any of the
Native American. Ago, but yes, I have read that.
Well, you know, they talk about in that the Battle of Little Bighorn was actually planned. The strategy was developed in dreams. Now, the Native Americans didn't do too well in the long run, but Little Bighorn, they did quite well. And so, you know, they used magical thinking in order to come up with their strategy. But they came up with a strategy that worked quite well, and it's you know, if Glenna, if you think of her as being she's not autistic, but if she's something like autistic, sort of like a savant, she has a different way of looking at things that brings her to realizations that may not follow a logic that an ordinary mind can understand.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, it can come to a correct conclusion. So the Rain Man looking at a pile of dominoes and telling you how many are there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And I know Rain Man was fiction, too.
Right, there you go. Yeah. Well, Bobby, you want to ask the question?
I would love to ask the question. John, you've been with us before, so this won't take you too much in surprise, but we love to have our guests talk a little bit about writer's block, whether they experience it, and if so, what do you think of it, and how do you get around it, or maybe you don't even believe in it. Take it away.
Well, I would have, the last time I was on, I said I've never experienced writer's block, I believe. I did, maybe to a certain extent, but the type of writer's block I used to experience solely was being blocked by having too many ideas come at me at once and start writing something and then be pulled away to start writing something else, and pretty soon I get pulled away from that to start writing something else, and after a while I'm not finishing anything, and that's still something that I struggle with. But I've had also just in the last couple of years, the problem of staring at the blank page and trying to work things out too thoroughly before I start putting things down on paper or on the word processor, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
But the first type of writer's block I deal with by writing down ideas that I'm going to come back to later and basically telling myself, you'll have your turn, and then probably never going back to that idea that's pulling me away in real life. And the second type, I do, I think, what a lot of people do. I just start getting words on the paper and assume that I'm going to be able to fix them later on. And, you know, the way I write, I'm kind of mostly a pantser. I write just as things come to me, and then after that I go through, make an outline and try to organize things. Just completely backwards and time consuming, but since I do that anyway, as long as I could get started and get things moving, eventually things do seem to get moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I approach it.
Uh-huh.
Just take it till you make it, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's all you can do. It's like like you said when you're on before, you've never experienced it, and now you have. So
yeah,
things change.
It's not fun.
You know, you're not always lucky.
We had a guest, or maybe it was even you, Jim, on a recent show that said you can't edit a page that is blank.
Blank, yeah.
Just, you know, you have to get it down on paper, on words on paper.
Yep, you have to put it on paper, or you can't edit a blank page. So.
No, that's absolutely true. And sometimes, I don't know, lately, just this last couple of months, I've been going back and looking at some of the early stories that I wrote when I really didn't have much in the way of skills. Mm-hmm. I thought I did at the time, and maybe I just think I do now, but I've been going back, and what I find is I had some really good ideas. I just didn't execute them very well. Uh-huh. So that's really giving me a whole new burst of material.
Uh-huh.
That's coming out. What I find is that I shorten it quite a bit. I was really wordy. I had a couple of 8,000 word short. Well, they really were chapters. And I've shortened them. I cut them in half about, you know, that seems to be about all I need.
Well, an 8,000 word chapter is a pretty big chapter.
Oh, go ahead.
8,000 word chapter is a big chapter. I mean, that's...
I'm cutting them in... Yeah, I know, and a lot of my... But, well, you know, the thing is I'll break those into multiple chapters frequently, too, but I was not doing it that way back in the day. I would just kind of... Each chapter was a mini development, I guess, 8,000 words.
Yeah. That's. Hey, we had a guy on last week. His name was Mark Reynolds, and he was having somewhat of a problem with some reviews that he had gotten initially, and that was a year before, a couple years before. And we talked about reviews quite a bit last week, and so I want to ask you, John. Now, I read a review of yours today that said, I love every word this man writes. Which is a good review. I mean, it's short, concise, to the point, doesn't get flowery, tells you everything you need to know. John Biggs is a good author. Have you ever gotten bad reviews, and how did you feel about them when you got them?
You know, I never look at reviews. I can't say never. I know I have, and I've gotten some that I don't know. I never in critique groups I've been to, for example, I've had some people be very critical, and I never ignore anything anybody says.
Mm-hmm.
I may not act on it the way they would expect me to act on it, but usually when somebody finds something to be critical of, they may not be right from my point of view, but something is wrong with that story. Like a lot of times they think the dialogue should be changed, and it's really a plot point.
Uh-huh.
But something's wrong.
Uh-huh.
I got one story that I sent in to a local literary journal, to an Oklahoma literary journal, and it got... They sent it back and they said, you know, this story is really good, but it loses tension in the third scene. And I thought, what the hell does that mean? Loses tension in the third scene. And so, you know, I don't know what to do with that. So, you know, what I did, I tried to correct it, and I sent it back, and they said, no, it just didn't meet expectations. And so I wound up submitting it to another journal, one out of Thailand, oddly enough. This guy sent the same story back, and he said, in the third scene, you have this guy engaged in a fight, and he said, it's too soon for this to happen. This needs to happen, and damn, that's how I lost tension in the third scene. Only he told me exactly what I did wrong, and he was right. I could see it as soon as he said it, but I don't know. When people tell me something, it depends on how they tell me, but I will always try to act on it if I think it's legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's coming from hatred or something like that. There are some writers who just flat out don't like other writers. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Oh, absolutely. I, yeah, we've all experienced that one.
Yeah, go check some of my reviews.
Pulitzer are the worst about that. As far as
you know, it's like not everybody is going to. It's like what I told Mark. I said, not everyone is going to like your work. Not everyone is going to think the same way you do and like the stories that you write. Not everyone is going to. Yeah. And it's unfortunate that they feel it necessary to get a hold of one of your works and just beat the shit out of it because they personally don't like it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean the general population doesn't like it. It just means this one guy doesn't like it. You know, and that's what I tried to get into Mark last night. I said, don't listen to one review. And we have writers, we've talked to, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of writers on this show. And a lot of them are on Facebook. And you look at some of their stuff, and, you know, it's like you're screaming for reviews. I need reviews. I need reviews. Somebody write me a review. Why?
Yeah.
You know,
I've done that.
Yeah. I actually posted on my first book. I posted a picture of myself holding up a sign that said "Will write for reviews." And you know, and I actually got a few, but some of them I didn't want.
Yeah.
Now you have your mug, and you just fill it full of bourbon and say "Will write for reviews," and then put an arrow on the mug and says "Bourbon."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I tell you, the reviews that I would like to be able to get are the ones I've had more trouble getting my books into the library than I feel like I should have. I'm a local writer, and you'd think that I wouldn't have that much trouble. I've been Oklahoma Book Award finalist. I've published two stories in the very first literary journal of the Oklahoma City Metropolitan Library literary magazine.
Yeah.
And, I just cannot. I've got one book that I've done in the library, and it's the first and the worst.
Yeah. Well, just go and hand them the books and say, here, they're signed, put them in your system, and they're yours. Then they'll sit on some cards.
Well, I can do that. I can do that, but I would like them to buy them and stock them, you know.
Well, you may have to give them a few before they start buying them.
Yeah.
Well, I have done that to a certain extent, but it's I don't know. It's a difficult thing that in order for them to libraries to take you seriously, you need reviews from the library. There's a newspaper that they do. It's very hard to get those reviewers to look at your stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just hard to get the book in their hands too.
Yeah.
So, hey, look, we're running out of time, John, and I'm sorry about the way that tonight started, but we got through it. So,
we did indeed.
We did indeed. So, if you don't mind, could you give our listeners an idea of what your email address is and your website and where they can find your books and you?
Yes, I am. My email is. John Biggs, this is a complicated email. John Biggs 7316 at yahoo.com is the one I usually use.
Okay.
My website is going to be changing very shortly, completely, but it's johnbiggsoklahomawriter.com.
Okay.
And I'm on Twitter at Big Spirit, BiggSpirit. You can pick my books up on any electronic medium.
Okay.
Amazon certainly, and I've got an Amazon page that's got all of them and got most of the short story anthologies that I've been involved in posted there as well.
Okay. Cool.
And was there something else?
Nope. Actually, the one sale you had on Amazon, the ebook. $2.99? That was me.
Oh, okay.
So you're welcome.
I do have a free Aldrin's. My first novel is permanently free.
Oh.
On Amazon.
Cool.
On Kindle. And it's on all the electronic media.
Excellent.
Barnes & Noble as well.
We got to run. So thank you again for putting up with us tonight because it's been a joyous but a raucous evening, I have to tell you. So thank you so much,
John. Thank you very much.
And come back and see us, would you? When we actually have our shit together.
Sure. I sure will.
All right, take care, my friend.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, bye-bye. And John Biggs, writer from Oklahoma. Yeah. And what a night. Somehow, holy crap.
Somehow we're still here.
Bobby, you're still with us, right?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
I didn't want to hang up on you again this week. Oh. I just don't need you coming back here and beating me up. Henry Park was going to be with us this evening, but Henry is a little busy doing an interview with Wes Studi tonight.
Yeah.
So he's either writing his questions down or he's interviewing him in person. So I can hardly wait to see that. It'll be, of course, out in the Roundup, which is Henry's Western Roundup blogspot.com. And you can read all of Henry's stuff there. Bobby, thanks for putting up with us tonight.
Of course.
Oh, my God. If somebody would told me tonight was going to go like this, I probably would have said, yeah.
Best of show tonight. Oh, boy.
Oh, my. Well, next
I
week.
I think all of our equipment must have been struck by lightning.
Well, I'll tell you what.
We didn't know about it.
I actually can walk to the door and lightning will fly out of my hair. And next week, we have a gentleman, Ankit Shukla. He has written a book called The Even Better Life. And I believe that you two got that today in your email. So it's not a very long book, but possibly you can tell me how to be a better radio host. I don't know. Oh, my God. I don't even know where this guy lives. But anyway, wait a minute. I think I can probably tell you. He lives in Aurora, Colorado, right over by
Denver. Yeah, and, from where I
yeah we just finished a book about Denver, or at Colorado Springs.
Colorado Springs.
Okay, Bobby Jean, got anything to tell us before I dump you?
No, I don't have anything to say, except I will do a little plug for Courtney Joyner's Nemo Rising.
Okay.
Please go and get this book. This is an amazing, amazing romp. Every page is just packed with sentences. You can't wait to get to the next one. And I had to go out and buy 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea because I didn't remember much about it. And now I want to read the book that gave Courtney all the ideas for the sequel.
Right.
So, yes, I'll just give that little plug for Nemo Rising.
Excellent. Excellent. And, of course, we are coming up on it. The Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival will be April 20th. 21st and 22nd this year. We have a pretty good lineup of writers coming in. Of course, it's with Out West gone, and we really miss them because we miss them. This year it's sponsored by Santa Clarita and Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books, and of course we'll be there both days. We have a 20 by 40 tent, or 10 by 40 tent,
10 by 40.
Over by the stage, so feel free to stop by. And of course this year, the Cowboy Festival, there's no charge for entry, so everybody come out and come visit our writers. And for Richard, and of course, Richard and I have just finished a book called The Last Lonely Trail.
We will have copies there.
Which we will have sign. Copies there for sale, signed by the authors.
Yeah.
And Bobby Jean, I hope you can find your way back to Santa Clarita in April.
Well, we are seriously considering it.
Oh, we would love that.
We know we could stay with our dear friend David Veal, who I know is helping you out.
Yep. I just had lunch with him on Monday.
Yeah, he's very excited.
Oh, he is. He is. And we got a lot of stuff together. We're actually paying our runners this year to pick up the food and they will only be working for the bookshop. So.
And let us hope that they don't turn the ovens on us and it's in the 90s
right.
on one of those days.
So those of those writers, all of you writers who have responded, which has been every single one except for Cheryl Rogers, and I believe that she is now retiring, you will have you'll have first dibs on the cobbler and the coffee, and because our runners will be there all day Saturday, all day Sunday. So bring money to tip them.
Yes.
And they're just working for the Buckaroo Bookshop. So there you go. We worked that out. Okay. That's us. It's for us tonight. Bobby Jean, again, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to talking to you again, of course, next Thursday.
Definitely. See you all here.
One of these days, I'm going to sneak a phone call into you and Gary's show. Of course, he never answers his phone.
I'm not sure. He'd probably be able to pick it up okay, but that rarely happens. So I know.
The one time I got through, he goes, "Oh, I have a phone call." All right. Bobby Jean, thanks again. Miss you. Love you. And come back and see us.
All right. Well, we'll meet you here next week.
You got it. Hey, Richard, thanks again.
Okay.
And, of course, for Richard Palinelli, for Bobby Jean Bell, for myself, Jim Christina, and the Writer's Block, this is LA Talk Radio, and we are out of here.